I think I'm entitled.
You want answers.
I want the truth.
You can't handle the truth.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
Black people speak for black.
Oh, yes, sir.
Black Americans. We're not African American. We're not people of color. We're not black and brown, minority. BIPOC.
None of that.
None of that. Strict, this is about our people demanding the resources. Just as you're giving these people, these newcomers who are walking into this country.
All right, you're right.
And sister's correct. How do you take a new group of people that have paid no taxes, can't vote, and you put them in front of the voters?
I'm not going to pay them no damn taxes.
And so we say this to you, Mayor, Governor, President, if you think that they're that powerful, that you have the acquiesce and answer to them over us, then you tell them to vote for you in these next elections.
That's right.
You tell them to support your Democratic National Convention. And we're going to show you how we feel about the Democratic National Convention.
Turn it out.
Thank you.
If you think you're going to have a peaceful Democratic National Convention in the city of Chicago while our people starve it,
that's right.
Stay tuned.
Stay tuned. Says it's not going to happen like that. That is one of the citizens addressing the city council in Chicago talking about the Democrat National Convention coming up this summer. And in fact, it's going to be pretty raucous, judging by that, at least in the streets. The last time we had something that might be approaching that would be Mayor Daley in the 60s. But in this case, it's going to be Democrats in the street fighting against what is happening because of illegals coming in, taking up all the money, the resources that American taxpayers are losing, are now paying for. That convention, again, is August 19 through August 22. Our boots on the ground correspondent, Andrew, I'm going to keep him busy during that time. I don't need to keep him busy. He's emailing me stuff at 2 a.m. in the morning. Thanks, Andrew. Thanks for waking me up. Listen, we never really sleep around here. We go through this on a constant basis. All right, so let's welcome you and set the stage here. We are March 11, 2024, the second hour of Larry Connors USA back-to-back. And reminding you, we're here every Monday through Friday from 6 to 8 p.m. I truly appreciate you listening as you can, and reminding you that when we're on the air, we are streaming video for you. You can watch the program at Larry Connors USA Rumble, Facebook, Twitter, News Talk STL, Rumble, Facebook, Twitter, and even YouTube. And if you miss anything, you can always pull it up at LarryConnorsUSA.com or LarryConnorsUSA Facebook. Watch at your pleasure and share with others, please. We want everybody involved. I had, I had one of my loyal listeners send me a note today saying, we and our group are going to be out doing everything we can to make sure the votes go to the polls, that the voters go to the polls, because we're going to make sure we have more than enough votes to win the election, that it can't be challenged. And I thank her for that. And she said, in her view, and I've echoed this before, this is a most, most critical election. I know you keep hearing that, and you think, blah, 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 everything's in a critical. They all are important, and they're more so now because of the assault upon our democracy. And that's not by Trump, even though some want to believe it. And I'm not even laying it all at the feet of the Democrats. I am laying it at the feet of the progressives who want our borders to be open for anyone and everyone to come in and to not be vetted. And why, of course, we certainly know why. They want to add more to the various states, because right now, members of the illegal community are being counted and have been counted for the 2020 census to reapportion congressional districts. Now, keep this in mind. Every state has two senators. The number of congressional representatives you get in the House is based upon how many residents you have in the state. And I think the number now, they divided around 750,000 for each congressional district. But however they're dividing it, whatever the number is, if you've got a lot of people living there that are not really legal, but they've been counted in the census, then that inflates that number. And that is why you have Tennessee Senator Bill Hagerty offering a provision, an amendment, which would put an end to this.
My amendment's simple. It would require that the census determine basic population statistics, like the number of citizens, non-citizens, and illegal aliens that live in this country, you know, what the census is supposed to do. And it would require that only U.S. citizens be counted in determining the number of House seats and electoral votes that go to each state. That's pretty simple. That's pretty straightforward. That's how most Americans think things should work here in America. Unfortunately, illegal aliens are currently counted for the purposes of determining how many congressional seats and how many electoral votes a given state may obtain. The more illegal aliens, the more non-citizens in your state or your district, the greater your voting power in Congress and the greater your voting power in presidential elections.
The greater your power in your elections, and especially presidential elections. Now, I mentioned to you earlier that the number of inside each census tract, I said 750,000. I meant 73,000. Well, I meant 75,000, but it is closer to 73,000. But the point still being made that the more numbers you have inside each state, then the more representation that state will get. Currently, the state of California has the most, 52 representatives. Six states have only one representative: Alaska, Delaware, North Dakota, South Dakota, Vermont, Wyoming. And Bill Hagerty's state that he represents has only nine. So he's recognizing that, look, we're going to lose our voice inside the House of Congress. Now, again, the balance of the creators of the Constitution were extremely astute in how to make sure the common man was not forgotten. Every state getting the same number of senators, but the number of representatives for that state based upon the population creates the number of districts, and that in turn leads to how many congressmen you get. As I said, California getting currently 52 representatives, which means they carry a lot of weight in Congress when it comes to any voting. So you have Congressman Hagerty trying to push forward his bill, but he's facing obstacles.
This means that in a state like California, millions of illegal aliens result in California getting several more congressional seats, several more electoral college votes. This not only destroys the principle of one person, one vote, by making some Americans' votes more powerful than others, but it encourages illegal immigration in sanctuary cities as a way to increase political power. Think about that. Over the past 3 years, Americans have seen the devastating consequences of this perverse incentive to bring illegal migrants into this country, to leverage them to build more congressional districts and more electoral votes on the backs of these illegal migrants. Joe Biden has allowed nearly 10 million migrants to come into our country illegally just since he took office 3 years ago. That's significantly more than the entire population of my state. That's more than 13 congressional seats and electoral votes that are wrongly distributed.
Absolutely. And I had to correct myself again. I was right the first time when I said around 750,000. But for some reason, the number wasn't clicking in my head. So, and I didn't have my glasses on. As if you're watching on our video now, you see that I've got them on. And I'm restating, I said 750,000. The 2020 U.S. Census said 760,000 plus per congressional district. But Hagerty's point still remains the same. If you're flooding some of these districts that are especially Democrat with more illegals and they're being counted in that census, they're going to get more representation. Do you remember when Democrats were against illegals invading America? It wasn't that long ago. Example, President Bill Clinton.
All Americans, not only in the states most heavily affected, but in every place in this country, are rightly disturbed by the large numbers of illegal aliens entering our country. The jobs they hold might otherwise be held by citizens or legal immigrants. The public service they use impose burdens on our taxpayers. That's why our administration has moved aggressively to secure our borders more by hiring a record number of new border guards, by deporting twice as many criminal aliens as ever before, by cracking down on illegal hiring, by barring welfare benefits to illegal aliens. In the budget I will present to you, we will try to do more to speed the deportation of illegal aliens who are arrested for crimes, to better identify illegal aliens in the workplace, as recommended by the commission headed by former Congresswoman Barbara Jordan. We are a nation of immigrants, but we are also a nation of laws. It is wrong and ultimately self-defeating for a nation of immigrants to permit the kind of abuse of our immigration laws we have seen in recent years, and we must do more to stop it.
We must do more. We must do more to stop it. We must do more to stop it. And he got a round of applause. That was Bill Clinton during one of his State of the Union addresses, 1995. Obama was elected, of course, president in 2009, in January. Here was his statement in 2009 regarding illegals.
This is not going to be a free ride. It's not going to be some instant amnesty. What's going to happen is you are going to pay a significant fine. You are going to learn English. You are going to go to the back of the line so that you don't get ahead of somebody who was in Mexico City applying legally. But after you've done these things over a certain period of time, you can earn your citizenship. So that it's not something that is guaranteed or automatic. You've got to earn it. But over time, you give people an opportunity.
Well, that had one reasoning for it. But the bottom line was, he's saying, it's not going to be automatic. You're going to get in here. That was when Obama made the statement in 2009. And he also added a caveat as to what we cannot have happen to this country.
They can't have a situation where you just have 500,000 people pouring over the border without any kind of mechanism to control it. So we've got to deal with that at the same time as we deal in a humane fashion with folks who have put down roots here, have become our neighbors, have become our friends. They may have children who are U.S. citizens. That's the kind of comprehensive approach that we have to take.
Well, that makes sense, but that's not where we are now. We do have hordes pouring across the border, the very thing he said we should not be having. And then let's go back to Joe Biden when he was a senator. And Bush 41 was in office and had delivered his State of the Union address, and Joe Biden was selected by the Democrats to respond. And Joe Biden wanted to take offense and chastise Bush 41 for not doing enough for law and order. Really, he did. Listen.
To put it in very personal terms for a moment, Joe Biden, me, I would settle for a world in which I could worry about the same kinds of things that my parents worried about, in which I only had to worry about the grades my children got in school rather than the drugs they're being exposed to, in which I only had to worry about the prices my wife had to pay at the supermarket instead of fearing that she might get mugged by a junkie in the parking lot as she loads her groceries into the car, in which tonight I could call my mom just to wish her pleasant dreams, not for the purpose of making sure she's safe in her own home. That's the kind of world I want. That's the kind of world you deserve.
That's the kind of world we deserve. Did you hear how much he was concerned about law and order? And he shouldn't have to be calling his mom, acting like he's just checking on her before the end of the night when he's really checking, make sure she's in the house and safe. That was Biden as a senator, a Democrat, but a reasonable Democrat compared to where we are now. Because Joe Biden is the one that's turned the borders wide open. But again, at that time, he was all about, we need to make sure everybody is safe. And he thought George Bush's campaign, Bush 41, was not going to do enough to control the illegal drugs coming into our country. Can you believe that? Well, let's listen.
In a nutshell, the president's plan doesn't include enough police officers to catch the violent thugs, not enough prosecutors to convict them, not enough judges to sentence them, and not enough prison cells to put them away for a long time. We disagree with the president's decision to cut back on our previous commitment to protect against drugs coming across the border, to cut the Customs Service, the Coast Guard, and the Border Patrol. We think we should do more to stem the flow of drugs across our borders, and we think we should go one step further. Let's go after the drug lords where they live, with an international strike force. There must be no safe haven for these narco-terrorists, and they must know it. And we don't have to promise a world without worry or fear. We're not asking for that much. All we have to do, together, is to keep our promises and stay together. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Joe. My, how the things have turned. Now he is all about illegals invading our country, bringing across more and more illegal drugs, knowing they are, knowing that we have 200 to 300 minimum die every day from fentanyl or some of the other drugs now being brought in, much less the human trafficking, especially children. There's no law and order inside the White House and their attitude right now. If Joe Biden, and I'm going to give him credit for really believing what he said when he was a senator, that he really believed that we needed to do more. And I haven't looked at the details of what Bush was planning on cutting back or changing. My guess is it was not going to be that dramatic because he was also a law and order man. And he was against drugs, obviously. But Biden is taking the attitude that we just have to do more to protect our country. But the difference is that was then, and here we are now. His remarks at that point as serving as a U.S. senator, while Bush was 41 was in office, is 180 degrees from where we think things should be. And we know that. And we know there's no way we should ever be in this situation. But we've allowed it. In fact, we've encouraged it by this administration. I'd love it when we can go back and show how these guys have done a 180. And why they do it? For the votes. Purely the votes. Coming up, the economic picture and really and truly understanding inflation.
You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
Question, do you know what vermiculite is? It is an insulation in the attics of hundreds of thousands of homes and public buildings. Looks like kitty litter, but often contains asbestos. Wellington Environmental is the largest company in the Midwest that can remove that hazard for you. Wellington has what is called the General, a powerful industrial vacuum that can suck vermiculite out of the attic. Hang on, there's something else you should know. Many of you might qualify for up to a $4,000 rebate. You should at least contact Wellington to see if you qualify. And here's something else. Wellington arrives at the time they give you, not sometime within 4 hours. 314-644-4930. 644-4930. WellingtonSTL.com. WellingtonSTL.com. Wellington Environmental. Your world. Cleaner. Better. Safer. Be well with Wellington.
Talk radio made in St. Louis.
Very excited for what you guys are doing for the St. Louis community.
For St. Louis.
Relevant local talk.
Saying what we are thinking.
This is News Talk STL.
No, you guys are awesome. I love you. And it really, it's a tremendous honor to be on the station.
News, analysis, and opinion.
Thanks for us covering the local and global.
People, this is America.
We better open our eyes.
Really local? Really good.
News Talk STL at 101.9/94.1 and NewsTalkSTL.com.
Lit Cigar Lounge in Chesterfield is a very special deal. You do not want to miss this. A bottle of Angel's Envy engraved with your name, or maybe get several with your company name. What a great gift for special clients. So you can get one or several. Check the Lit Cigar Lounge STL Facebook for full details, or just visit Lit in Chesterfield. In fact, I'll probably see you at Lit Cigar Lounge in Chesterfield. Lit Cigar Lounge.
Hey, St. Louis, my name is Rob Carter. My new primetime show will explore the collaboration between corrupt media and our corrupted political system. From manipulated elections, open borders, mandated medicines, and unconstitutional lockdowns, what is going on? The Rob Carter Show. Let's talk about it on The Rob Carter Show. Join me weeknights from 8 to 10 p.m. on News Talk STL.
Rob Carter, live and local, weeknights at 8 on News Talk STL. This is News Talk STL.
I've been holding out so long. I've been sleeping all alone. Lord, I miss you. I've been hanging on the phone. I've been sleeping all alone. I won't miss you.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
If Biden wins re-election, he'll seek tax cut extensions only for people earning less than $400,000 a year. What do you think of that plan?
So, Margaret, let me explain. So when we redid taxes in 2017, the personal side of the tax code expires December 31st. Of 2025. So as of January 1st, 2026, we revert back to the very complicated tax code that we had in 2017. Mm-hmm. So people have to remember that. It was extremely complicated. You bring in all these things as personal deductions, itemized deductions. Now you bring in SALT deductions. We raise tax rates.
State and local taxes.
Right. We raise tax rates, but you bring in all the loopholes that we got rid of. So what we tried to do when we rewrote taxes is we tried to simplify it, and we tried to get rid of all the loopholes that basically the wealthy people in America use. And that was a way that we tried to make the tax code fairer. And the data shows that we've made the tax code fairer. If you actually look at who pays taxes in this country, the bottom 50% of earners in the United States pay 2.3% of tax collected. And the top 10% pays over 70% of tax collected in this country.
That's a pretty staggering amount, and I know it's a lot of stats when you're listening on the air and you're busy driving or doing something else. I'm going to re-imprint them for you, though, because you were listening then to Gary Cohn, the IBM vice chair, in an interview he did with Margaret Brennan over the weekend on CBS News, Face the Nation. Again, Brennan, I should say Cohn, was talking about we did raise taxes and trying to get rid of all the loopholes. And what's going to happen, we did that in 2017. That's when Trump was in office, if you recall. Well, the personal side of that tax code expires December 31 of 2025. And everybody's saying, well, what's going to happen then? Well, he said, people are going to have to remember what's going to happen at that point. Tax rates will go up again unless something is put in place to stop it. And then he points out, if you look at who pays taxes in this country, the bottom 50% of those earning money in the U.S., the bottom 50% of us, pay 2.3% of all the tax collected. The top 10% pay 70% of all the taxes collected in the country. Now, I know, I hear those out there. What about the millionaires, the multimillionaires? Well, there's another part of that discussion I want to share with you. As he continued that discussion with Margaret Brennan.
The bottom 50% of earners in the United States pay 2.3% of tax collected, and the top 10% pays over 70% of tax collected in this country.
That sounds like the exact opposite of what President Biden described in the State of the Union, because he took aim at billionaires. He said they pay a lower tax rate than teachers. He proposed minimum taxes of 25% on billionaires. How do you respond to that?
Well, I think you've got to take one little step back here. A billionaire is a measure of net worth. It's not a description of their taxable income. Mm-hmm. You could be a billionaire and have no taxable income. You could not have $1 billion and have a high taxable income. So when you look at the way
you're just sitting on assets.
You're just sitting on assets. And you could be sitting on illiquid assets. You could be sitting on liquid assets. We do a very good job in this country of taxing income. That's what the Constitution talks about. The Constitution talks about taxing your income. Mm-hmm. There is no income in this country unless you buy a tax-free bond that doesn't get taxed at a minimum of
20%. A minimum of 20% unless it's a tax-free bond. So if billionaires are sitting on their wealth, be they liquid assets or not, they don't have to pay taxes on what they already accumulated. There are those in this nation who think, well, billionaires aren't paying their tax. I just told you, and the stats back it up. When you talk about the top 10% of our nation, and of course, inside that very top of the 10% would include billionaires, but between them and those inside the rest of the 10%, paying 70% of all taxes collected. They collect taxes on income. Now, if they're earning money on their stocks and they've sold them, they're going to have to pay a price on it. You remember this all goes back to Warren Buffett. You remember that when Obama was in office and Warren Buffett was complaining that, you know, I look at the taxes and everything and I'm paying more than my secretary does based on comparable figures of percentages. My statement to Warren Buffett at that time was, Warren, write a check to the government. I will guarantee you they will cash it. Make up the difference if you think you're underpaying. Warren Buffett's smarter than that. He's not going to do that. But he did team up with Obama to introduce, quote, the Warren Buffett legislation to basically raise the tax rates on all the others. Some more on the billionaires like Warren Buffett, but not that much. It was again going to fall down on the smaller people. In fact, that is why I was originally invited up to the White House to interview Obama as he was pushing the Warren Buffett bill. And that is the interview where I knew I've been through enough of these interviews with presidents that they were going to try to occupy and monologue and basically jaw me to death with what they wanted to say. But I told them, well, I got questions from some St. Louisans, I'm sure you want to answer their questions. I said, sure, sure. So he automatically restricted himself to about 40, 45 seconds of the 3-plus minutes we had. So they gave me the chance to ask the other questions, which some say, you never should have asked that one question. Got the IRS on you? Got your company looking for a way to get rid of you? The interview is still up if you want to look at it. It's on YouTube. You search Larry Connors Obama interview. It's there. Maybe we'll replay it again someday. But the point here being is that too many people have a misunderstanding about the wealthy and that they don't pay taxes. If they've got income coming in, if there are loopholes, they will use them. Tax avoidance is not illegal. Tax evasion is. And they've got a staff of attorneys around them, as does Donald Trump. They're going to find ways to work things in as, well, make it an expense so it reduces our tax burden. That's all legal within the loopholes that exist. So let's continue this discussion as, again, the IBM vice chair is talking on News Nation with Margaret Brennan.
Let's talk about inflation for a minute, because I think it's a really important concept for everyone to understand. Inflation has a compounding effect, meaning as you look at inflation year over year, you're adding up those numbers. You're not starting at a zero every year. Right. So if we had 6% inflation last year, 7% inflation, and now we have 4% inflation, that's 10% inflation. So if you take a basket of groceries at the beginning of 2020, just a simple basic basket that cost $100, it costs well over $125 today, because those 4% 1 year and 7% 1 year and 7% the next year, they add up, they're cumulative. So there's a huge cumulative effect inflation.
So when people are being told, consumers, you're wrong, inflation's heading, no, they're right.
They're completely right.
Actually,
they're completely
expensive.
Right. And what they're more right about is we at least finally have gotten to the position where wage growth is faster than inflation. But we had not been there till the last few months. So yeah, people were losing purchasing power.
And that's what you're saying at the grocery store. You lost purchasing power until your wages get ahead of the inflation rate, or the inflation rate drops and dips just enough. It is still nowhere near where it was when Trump was in office. And then, of course, you get to trying to plan the future for your family, and especially if you're newlywed or you're going to get married and you're looking to buy a home, or you're living in an apartment now with family and three kids and you really want a chance to have a yard, the American dream, a family and a home with a yard and everything else, that's not so certain anymore.
Possible. So yeah, people were losing purchasing power, and that's why people were angry. And then take on top of that the high interest rate environment, where if you thought you might have been in a position to buy a house because you save money, you go out to get a mortgage at 7 or 8%, you can't afford a house. Mm-hmm. So people got very frustrated because the cost of their everyday lives got very expensive, and the cost of investing in their future by buying a home got nearly impossible.
Nearly impossible. I was talking the other day to some folks that they're living in a home, but their family has grown. Bless God for that, that they've got good, healthy children. They need more room. There are a lot of families in that situation. They may be living in an apartment and need more room. And many of them might be immigrants, legal immigrants who came to this country. And maybe they're sharing part of a basement with another family, or living with relatives until they can get enough to get their own house. That should not be an impossible dream for Americans. And it wasn't under the Trump administration. Do we go through tough times? Yes. Do we go through layoffs where you've got everything set and you are able to buy the home, you get into the home, and suddenly you lose your job for downsizing or something beyond your control? That happens too. But right now, folks are trying to get in there and get a house. And if they weren't able to buy it at the time when the mortgage rates were really low, around 2.5 to 3, maybe 4%, now they're up above that. And it looks like they're going to stay there until we get closer to the election. And I will bet money the Fed decides to cut the rates again. But they have to be careful, because if they cut the rates, that's going to push inflation up, which means, again, your income you have coming in is not going to keep up with what you're trying to buy for general needs for the family. All right, coming up next, how January 6th was using banks, the January 6th Commission, FBI, going after banks and you.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
I'm always glad to have new sponsors, but I have turned some down. See, I only endorse clients if I believe in them. And I've been a spokesman for John Beal for 10 years. Through those years, listeners said they went with John Beal because they trusted me. And just recently, a woman named Mary wrote, "We got a John Beal roof based on your recommendation." Thank you, Mary, and all the others for calling John Beal, 1-800-NEW-ROOF, 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
No matter how large or small your digging project may be, no matter how urban or rural, you must always call 811 before any digging project. 811 is our national one-call number, alerting your local utility companies to come out and mark any lines they have near your dig site. So before you do this or this, make sure you do this. For digging projects big or small, make the call to 811, brought to you by Common Ground Alliance.
Sometimes you want to do something extra special for someone. Vincent's Jewelers can help you. Maybe you want to do something for yourself. Mark a date, something you accomplished. It doesn't have to be anything really expensive, but it has to mean something now and for the future. Vincent's, locally owned, just asked for the chance to work with you, as they have with me, on Olive, just east of 270. Every day, new specials at vincentsjewelers.com or Vincent's Facebook.
The United States Deputy Sheriff's Association is a national nonprofit and the largest non-governmental provider of services to law enforcement. The USDSA assists city, county, state, and federal agencies with free safety equipment donations and officer survival training, along with cash donations to families of law enforcement officers who perished in the line of duty, a citizen awareness program, and more. For more information on United States Deputy Sheriff's Association, please visit usdeputy.org.
I have a personal story about why I trust McGuire Moving and Storage. A relative needed to escape an unhealthy relationship. Josh, Christine, and the McGuire team were understanding, even comforting. That's why I'm honored to endorse McGuire. Since 1935, McGuire's been moving and caring for families. So, moving a home, office, local, or long distance, McGuireMoving.com, McGuireMoving.com.
This is News Talk STL.
Jolene, 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 I'm begging of you, please don't take my man. Jolene, 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 please don't take him just because you can.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
When the Bank of America provided the FBI a list of people who made financial transactions with their Bank of America card in Washington, D.C. between January 5th and January 7th, 2021, the practice of sweeping up thousands of Americans without probable cause and specify in a search for specific suspects is inconsistent with the specificity requirement of the Fourth Amendment and the entire criminal justice system. Considering how many Americans use Bank of America credit or debit cards, this list must have included thousands of people. This list almost certainly included members of Congress, their staff, who were performing constitutionally mandated functions, as well as reporters who were engaged in First Amendment protected activity. Countless of other individuals were swept into this surveillance without probable cause. The list included people who had a history of purchasing a firearm at any time, which is a constitutionally protected activity. So we likely have violations of the First, Second, and Fourth Amendment. The fact that Americans' data is handed over to the feds on a fishing expedition by the banking industry because their customers were present in a particular region or purchased a constitutionally protected item is unacceptable.
It is unacceptable. And those are the words of North Dakota Congressman Kelly Armstrong. And again, back to what he said in the beginning. The FBI asked the Bank of America, and it readily complied, to turn over all banking records of any customers who were in D.C. and made any kind of purchases of any type from January 5 through the end of January 6, probably also into January 7 of the January 6 event. You were in D.C. and you decide to stop in a gift shop, decide to buy a doll for your niece or your daughter. You use your card. Bingo, you're on the FBI list. And I told you last week how the FBI has begun to ramp up going after additional, suspects. They're just rounding up people is what they're doing, who were in D.C. on that date. They put them on a pause for a while, but now they're beginning to ramp them up. And why? Well, because it's an election year. We need to draw more attention to what happened January 6th because Trump is going to win re-election, it appears. And they got to make it clear to you that they tried to overthrow the government. No, they didn't try to overthrow the government. And now we have the document that's come forward that was basically held back by Liz Cheney, where she was refusing to let it be made public as to getting the Trump's push for the National Guard on January 6th. There was a political memoir on that point, and there were several people that were aware of it and noted it. Former Congresswoman Liz Cheney was then suppressing the evidence that Trump requested the National Guard troops for January 6, 2021. Now, in her report, her memoir of it, the former Wyoming Congresswoman, Republican in name only, falsely framed Trump as the mastermind of the January 6 trial. And the episode, I should say. But in deeper detail and looking into it, there's evidence that even the Federalist editor-in-chief, Molly Hemingway, reported that Cheney's committee concealed testimony from the former White House Deputy Chief of Staff, Anthony Ornato. In his first interview with the House investigators, January 28, 2022, he told lawmakers he overheard Mark Meadows, the chief of staff for the president, urge D.C. Mayor Bowser to mobilize as many National Guard troops as needed. He also testified Trump had suggested, we can provide you 10,000 if you need that many for those protests. So when they tell you that there was never an effort made, they're lying. They're holding it back. All right, we could go through that all day long, but I want to focus on something else that has a lot of questions around it. I've had this in my hand since the end of last month. Just haven't had time to get to it. This is from the Epoch Times. It says those security cameras that were supposedly set up to watch for any pipe bombs at the RNC and DNC, they were moved at the last moment. Let me read it as it appears. Two U.S. Capitol Police security cameras pointed at the offices of the Democrat National Committee during the January 6, 2021 pipe bomb incident were remotely redirected by police, didn't record or broadcast critical portions of the police response. Again, this is the Epoch Times. And they point out a review of yet-to-be-released footage found that the Capitol Police camera 3173, located directly across the street from where the DNC bomb was placed, was remotely directed away from the scene at 1:29 that afternoon, January 6, before the bomb squad arrived. Now, why would you do that? They also found that camera 8020, located high on the nearby Fairchild building, had been zoomed in, showing the bomb squad assembling along East Street Southeast until the Capitol Police commander redirected the camera at 1:44 that afternoon, just as the bomb robot began traveling toward the DNC. And then for the rest of the day, that camera pointed at a small park area of South Capitol Street Southeast, or the first one did, and then camera 8020, the second one, pointing at distant railroad tracks and a highway overpass. Nothing to see here, because we're not going to show it to you. Police video also didn't show the discovery of the DNC pipe bomb by an undercover police officer at 1:05 that day. Kamala Harris arrived at the DNC headquarters at 11:25 that morning. Two agents were in the street surveying the scene. Three black SUVs pulled into the garage. After the motorcade is inside, four agents are seen on the driveway and a Metropolitan Police Department squad back into the driveway. No bomb-sniffing dogs, were seen on the video, prior to, during, or after the arrival of the vice president. The FBI waited over a year to fully investigate these bombs, and they're still not releasing a lot of it. According to the Epoch Times, quoting Congressman Loudermilk, who is the Barry Loudermilk of Georgia, chairman of the House Administration Subcommittee on Oversight, he said, as part of our overall investigation into the events surrounding January 6th, critical questions remain unanswered. As we continue the investigation, my oversight committee will continue working with anyone interested in uncovering the truth. The American people have a right to know. I agree. Blaze Media had previously reported the DNC pipe bomb was discovered by a plainclothes Capitol Police officer, not a passerby. Investigators want to know, well, what kind of security sweep did you do before the VP arrived? One source, again, pointing to Capitol Police Camera 3173, say it was panned away from the DNC before the arrival of the bomb squad. And they're saying, here's another key question. How does the protective detail for the VP miss a pipe bomb in plain view at the base of a park bench just feet from the DNC building? And it had to be present around 9:30 a.m. to 11:25. They think it was planted maybe the evening before. And they also had a bomb-sniffing dog along the driveway of the Democrat National Committee headquarters, 4 feet, or I should say a few feet, from where the pipe bomb would be discovered. 3.5 hours later, the dog and the handler never indicated they'd found anything. Now, what we're hearing from the Secret Service, the FBI, what was a device that looked like a bomb? Well, you still look at it and investigate it, do you not? Just because it looks like a bomb, it may not be a bomb. You want to take that chance? That's not what you're supposed to do. But during a hearing in April 2023, the director of the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms Explosives was asked, were the pipe bombs operable? In other words, were they real? You know what his answer was? He said, no comment. You won't comment if it's real or not? Congressman Thomas Massey of Kentucky said, I'm not accepting that answer. And neither should you, the American public. So that inquiry continues as well. All right, now I want to go to something that happened over the weekend. This was yesterday on ABC with George, as I call him, Snuffleupagus from Sesame Street. But he's basically persecuting South Carolina Congresswoman Nancy Mace.
I'm not going to sit here on your show and be asked a question meant to shame me about another potential rape victim. I'm not going to do that.
It's actually not about shaming you. It's a question about Donald
Trump.
No,
you are shaming me.
You've endorsed Donald Trump for president.
Right.
Donald Trump has been found liable for rape by a jury. Donald Trump has been found liable for defaming the victim of that rape by a jury. It's been affirmed by a judge.
It was not a criminal court case, number one. Number two, I live with shame. And you're asking me a question about my political choices, trying to shame me as a rape victim, and I find it disgusting. And this is why women won't come forward.
Women won't come forward because they're defamed by those who perpetrate rape.
Judged and they're shamed, and you're trying to shame me this morning.
I think it's
disgusting.
I'm not shaming you at all.
I told my story. It took me 25 years to tell my story. I was judged for it. I still get judged for it today.
I'm asking you a very simple question.
You're shaming me for my political choices.
I'm asking you a question about why you endorse someone who's been found liable for rape.
It
was not a criminal court. George Stephanopoulos knows this. He's counting on his audience not to know it. I'm glad Senator Mace pushed back, and she was just not going to buy that. She was going to sit there, I said, Senator, Congresswoman Nancy Mace, and not allow him to put words into her mouth. He wants to say that Trump was convicted of rape. He was not convicted of rape. He was found liable for sexual abuse and later for defamation, but those are not criminal charges. But see, here's George Stephanopoulos. He thinks, I have a woman here in front of me, a MAGA person, a Republican. She herself is a victim of rape. She's already made her story public. But I want to know why a victim of rape would be willing to support someone like Donald Trump who had been convicted of rape. Except for this, Donald Trump has not been convicted of rape. Let's listen.
You're shaming me for my political choices.
I'm asking you a question about why you endorse someone who's been found liable for rape.
It was not a criminal court. But to sit here and ask me as a rape victim to try to shame me for my political choices is wrong, and I think it's offensive.
You can repeat that again and again and again.
And I'm going to, because I find it deeply offensive.
See, what you're doing is defending a man who's been found liable for rape. I don't understand how you can do that.
Not in a criminal court of law. This was a civil judgment over sexual abuse, not rape, by the way, and she made a mockery out of it.
Can we pull up the Washington Post headline right there? In fact, it has been shown to be rape. The judge affirmed that it was, in fact, rape. Donald Trump was found to have committed rape. That's just a fact.
That is a civil judgment, not a criminal court. They're two very different things, and you know better.
Well, I just showed you the facts.
You know better.
You show that you're very comfortable with what Donald Trump has done.
And what you've done is offensive to women who've been raped. What you've done this morning is offensive.
We'll let the viewers decide about that.
Yeah, well, here's the deal. Trump was not found guilty of rape. He was convicted in a civil case of sexual abuse and later for defamation, and is facing a fine for it, which is, of course, being appealed. You do not go to jail on a civil case. That is not a felony. That's a lawsuit. Do I think sometimes Trump says things he shouldn't? Yes. Have I called him out? Yes. But that has nothing to do with the fact that he is being accused by George Stephanopoulos of ABC. He's convicted of rape. No, he's not. But then, of course, let's hear the take from the Morning Joe crew and how they respond.
I just showed you the facts.
You know better.
You show that you're very comfortable with what Donald Trump has done.
And what you've done is offensive to women who've been raped. What you've done this morning is offensive.
We'll let the viewers decide about that.
Well, no, it's just not offensive. And she's not shamed because she's incapable of being shamed.
Although she tried to shame E. Jean Carroll. Well, my God.
Trump continually tried to shame E. Jean Carroll. And again, it's, I guess.
This is a woman who was leering and jeering Hunter Biden as he walked into the conference room when he tried to show up to testify in public.
Yeah.
And then ultimately their private testimony went very badly, but that's a side issue. She was acting like an eighth grader.
Here's another woman, Mika Brzezinski, saying a victim of rape is acting like an eighth grader. And what the hell does jeering Hunter Biden coming into a congressional testimony have to do with any of this? Nothing. Nothing. If they could find a race card, they'd pull it, but they don't have that one. So the best Trump card they think they've got is that he was convicted of rape, which is a lie. You doubt me? Look it up. You will not find he's been convicted of rape. But their audience won't do it. They'll just sit there and listen. I got it. No, you don't got it. You're being misled. And we're here to make sure you get the true story, both sides of the story. Rob Carter Show coming up next. And let me remind you of our pledge. One nation under God.